All right. Let's get fired up here.
Maximum freedom. Read.
Stay on target.
Maximum freedom.
Stay on target.
Maximum freedom. Read Rothbard.
Well, hello and welcome to the Actual Anarchy Podcast. This is the podcast where we talk about movies from a Rothbardian anarcho-capitalist perspective. And tonight, we're going to be doing a very timely movie that just came out on Christmas Day, Wonder Woman 1984. This is episode 214 of the show, and you can find the show notes more at actualanarchy.com/214. And from the old lesson, be careful of what you wish for. Those who enjoyed 2017's Wonder Woman may have wished for a sequel, and well, they got it, and they got it good and hard. And we're going to be talking about this one tonight with Jose Gallison of the Liberty Movement and his show, No Way Jose. But before we do that, let's check in with Robert, see how things are going in the restaurant business in Corona land. That is of the Herr Inslee's interior ministry of fucking you over in the restaurant biz.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. I'm super excited to be here. I'm excited about the news that giant mega study out of Wuhan, 10 million participants, 10 million people tracked. Not one single case of asymptomatic spread was found. So all the excuses for the lockdowns are bullshit, complete horseshit. The whole reason to wear a mask and to do the social distancing was because, you know, you can spread it around. Even if you appear to be healthy, you can still be spreading it. Nope. So all this lockdown crap, completely useless. You're destroying people's lives and economy for nothing. And we have the scientific evidence to prove it. So if you're still one of these lockdown people, I don't know what to tell you. You are a monster of some kind. But anyway, Daniel, I'm doing great, buddy. Doing fantastic. How was your Christmas? Fantastico?
Yeah, it was good. We had a super spreader event with the in-laws. We went to a cabin up near a mountain here and had snow and the whole Christmas vibe. The kids really enjoyed it. We did sleep overnight three nights in a row. And normally we would only do like one night just because usually they can't hold things together and behave long enough to still enjoy the benefits of, you know, getting rewarded for the behavior. But they were actually totally on board and doing great. So we stayed there the whole time. We had to make the most of being out of the house. You know, because like so much has been taken from everyone, but especially our kids, you know, like they can't go to the children's museum. They can't go to the library. They can't go to the water park. They can't go to, you know, anything really, anything that they've enjoyed. They were doing roller skating earlier in the year, swim lessons, all those things, all of that was gone and hanging out with their friends and all those things. So it's really kind of this horrific thing, like a huge portion of their lives has been robbed of them. And hopefully things will back off, you know, like people will get it through their heads that, hey, this is just an additional risk in your life. And it's very minor for most people. And there's no reason to basically destroy the economy and destroy people's lives to maybe, and not even for sure, like maybe lengthen the life of someone else. Maybe there's actually no evidence that any of that's happening. Like from the whole get-go, they were saying, well, the whole point of flattening the curve is to not overwhelm the hospitals. We're not going to be able to stop the spread of the thing, but we might slow it down significantly enough so that we can still manage the resources that we allocate or misappropriate, because I don't know if people are aware of this, but hospital beds are in limited supply due to government. Basically, there's a scheme in place where existing hospitals in a geographic area need to give their A-OK to any additional hospital entering into their geographic area. And so what do you think 9 times out of 10 they're going to say? Oh, we're fine. We have plenty. We don't need the additional competition. So whenever you hear about a shortage of beds, just think you got to thank government for that. And then the other thing related to capacity of beds, that's the other thing they kept saying, like the hospitals are overwhelmed. Well, they operate at like 80 to 85% capacity normally. You know, like an airline isn't going to fly around half empty planes all the time. They're going to schedule their thing so that they have as many people in the seats as possible. So it's not, you're not going to say there's a plane shortage. You're going to say that they're trying to manage their resources and keep as many people in the seats and fly as many people as they can, but they're still like bumping people all the time, offering you, you know, extra travel or, you know, free tickets or stay in the hotel and they'll give you a voucher or whatever, because they try to manage that. So they oversell some seats in order to mitigate the amount of travel that they're going to be doing. Similar thing with the hospitals, only with the hospitals, again, there's that limitation from the government preventing additional hospital space being made available. Anyway, I'm digressing. We're kind of going way off into the weeds here. But other than that, Christmas was great. Whoa, how about you?
Good. Whoa. Let me retort or add on to what you were all saying there. I was afraid you were going to start the show before I was going to get to say something about that. So yeah, there's a reason why the hospitals, obviously, they hold them at like 80 to 85, maybe 90% capacity in the ICU, because those are the most expensive. Those are the most profitable beds to put people in. I remember when my mom had like a panic attack maybe about 20 years ago, 30 years ago. It's a long time ago. But they put her in the ICU for like a couple of days. And it's just like, I remember going in there and she was fine. You know, she had a panic attack and it was pretty severe. And so she, you know, needed something, but I don't think that she needed to be, you know, held and observed for a couple of days, because we went in there and they're like, whoa, they got you in with the sick people. And she's like, yeah, I feel fine. But anyway, yeah, that's to your point. That's why they do that, because they make the most money that way.
Yeah. And don't get me started on the whole money thing. When they were giving incentive for hospitals and medical care providers to marking COVID on everything, because they would get extra compensation from the government. And if you put people on a ventilator, then that like doubled or tripled, something along those lines. And even if the providers are like trying to be totally above board, if there's like any, you know, questionable case or whatever, well, they're going to be incentivized to check this box over here and cha-ching, there's an extra $16,000 coming into their hospital. You know, fact check that all you want. I might be off by the numbers just a little bit, but the concept, the mechanism is there, and it's very much a real thing that serves to help juice the stats, if you will. That's another thing that the media likes to play into is counting cases or citing all these things where they're incentivizing everyone involved to make the numbers bigger and bigger, and they're using that as a fear impulse to get the masses kind of ginned up on all of this and be fearful for everything. And that is perfect cover for a savior to come along and say, oh, here's what we need to do. You just need to give away your rights to me and we'll make sure that everything gets better and better. And by the way, Orange Man bad. So anyway, we should start the show here. We're going to get fact check and there's going to be a little blurb on YouTube. Go to youtube.com/actualanarchy to find our channel, subscribe, hit the bell icon, all that. But there'll be a little like, COVID-19 disclaimer down at the bottom, I'm sure.
Yeah, and rightfully so, because, you know, they have the facts.
Just the facts. And we have just the facts tonight on Wonder Woman 1984 coming at you with Jose Galison in just a moment, right after these messages from Last Matters, which is us, by the way. Anyway, see you in a moment. Girl power. Hey everyone, it's Daniel Elwood and Robert Paul Johnson. We are the Last Nighters. You can find us at lastnighters.com, and you can also find us on the Liberty Movement YouTube channel. And we will be talking with somebody from the Liberty Movement who has a show on there as well tonight as we discuss the wonderful film that just came out, Wonder Woman 1984. It was released simultaneously in theaters and also on HBO Max just the other day on Christmas Day. And so we're finally doing a movie that's on topic and very current, which is pretty impressive for us as we usually do obscure movies from years ago. But anyway, hold on to your golden bracelets, your lariat of truth and roller skates. We step into the invisible plane with Jose Galison of No Way Jose of the Liberty Movement to talk about this brand spanking new movie. Wonder Woman 1984. I wondered what was happening. I wondered why things were happening. And I wondered what the plot was 84 times in this monstrosity of a movie that should have been about 84 minutes and goes on about an hour too long. But Jose, welcome to the show. Why don't you tell everyone where they can find what you do? Well, maybe start with what you do, what the Liberty Movement is, what your show specifically is, and then where people can find it.
Oh, hey, what's up, Daniel? So I come from the, all right, it's kind of a long story. This started as a Facebook group, and we, during the heat of the coup, we started the Liberty Movement Facebook group. And from there, we were just trying to, do whatever we can to help with the shit going on. So we were, our big thing is we wanted a cultural, non-political movement of some sort. It's kind of gone multiple different ways. And one way it's presented itself was through video and like podcast format. And I was one who kind of headed that up. And with that, we created the Liberty Movement YouTube channel, which the whole idea of that was to kind of have multiple shows on there and shows that kind of show the non-political cultural side of Liberty. So that's kind of why I, you know, hit up you for to have your show. I do my show. I do like interviews and stuff. My show being the No Way Jose show. Now I'm actually expanding and I'm going to start doing a little bit of political stuff, but that stuff won't be on the Liberty Movement YouTube channel. So, I mean, the idea, ideally, I'd like to get to the point where we have a whole bunch of shows in there. And, you know, obviously it's all voluntary. So if people want to bounce whenever, you know, if they feel like they're too big for the channel or whatever their reason may be, then cool. But yeah, that's, I got the No Way Jose channel. I have the No Way Jose YouTube channel and the Liberty Movement YouTube channel. The Liberty Movement YouTube channel is like way bigger right now. I just started the No Way Jose channel. I'll be having, I'll be actually with Patrick McFarland tomorrow. We'll probably be, I haven't completely hammered in what we're going to do, but that one might be a little bit more political because I think I might do like a 2020 in review type thing. That's kind of hard not to be. I have a show. It'll be in the description. Go to the YouTube channel, find me, all that good stuff. Just me talking to people. I want to talk to you about stuff that I'm interested in. Generally stray away from political stuff, but I kind of go in that way. I'm going to start going that way now a little bit here and there, but it's generally not what I care about anyway. So yeah, I kind of rambled there, but.
Perfect. No, that fits the style of your show. You had me on as a guest about a month ago. And so we'll have that on our show notes page at lastnightairs.com/157 for this here episode. We'll also have links to the Liberty Movement and your No Way Jose YouTube channel as well. But welcome to the show. I do appreciate having you on. And you are a bit of a comic book guy, as we were talking about in the pre-show. You got a bunch of stuff on the walls there behind you, so we're going to lean on you a little bit. Robert's a bit of a comic book guy as well. So this should be a fun conversation. Now, we're going to be starting off with the Google description here. So I'm going to pull that up, and we'll do a little screen share if I can hit the right button. All right, there we go. So Wonder Woman, 1984, PG-13, 2020, adventure/action film, 2 hours and 35 minutes. It's on HBO Max and was also in theaters. It has a 5.6 out of 10 on IMDb, 62% Rotten Tomatoes, and 59% Metacritic, and 70% of Google users liked it. I think that the initial reviews were much higher, but once it got released, it started getting driven down and down and down. But here is the description. Diana Prince lives quietly among mortals in the vibrant, sleek 1980s, an era of excess driven by the pursuit of having it all. Though she's come into her full power, she maintains a low profile by curating ancient artifacts and only performing heroic acts incognito. But soon, Diana will have to muster all of her strength, wisdom, and courage as she finds herself squaring off against Maxwell Lord and the Cheetah, a villainess who possesses superhuman strength and agility. Came out December 25th, 2020, directed by Patty Jenkins, who did the original Wonder Woman in 2017 that spawned this sequel. Budget $200 million, and we don't know how much money it's going to make, but it is getting a lot of notoriety right now. A lot of people have been watching it. A lot of people have been panning it. Stars Gal Gadot, Chris Pine, Kristen Wiig, and Mando himself. And I will go to Robert for his opening salvo, please.
$200 million budget. Wow, that is a big old fat ass of a budget. Impressive. Yeah, the first movie, I think, probably lended itself to that. With the success of that, I'm sure Patty Jenkins could command that kind of a budget for this thing. So I'm not going to mince words. This isn't a good movie. Whether you come at it from just a pure comic book format, from just a pure movie watcher format, from any kind of coherent story, you know, viewer. But there is one thing that I like about this movie a lot. It is that the feminist icon Wonder Woman joins the patriarchy. She learns in this movie that she will give up her powers for a man. She is in love with this man, and she will give up everything to be with him. She learns that she can't have it all. She learns that there are consequences, there are trade-offs, that she's got to choose one thing or another. Now, the movie doesn't actually have consequences because it's set in the past and everything gets wrapped up like an episode of a TV show at the end where everything's just hunky-dory even after all the craziness and mayhem. And none of it actually makes sense. But for the eternal feminist icon of Wonder Woman, who was all about, you know, coming from the Themyscira where it's just all women and how men are bad and men, you know, start wars. If you watch the first movie, it's all about how men are these evil creatures that start wars and women are the wise women that say this is all stupid. And if you watch Superman Red Son, Wonder Woman does the same thing. But in this movie, she's like, oh, Steve Trevor, I love you. I will do everything for you. And then she learns that, yes, you can't have it all and that there's trade-offs. So for me, that was the huge takeaway is that, Wonder Woman joins the patriarchy and that even feminists are panning this film. So we're not alone. I mean, I'm not saying it's a good movie. There's a million reasons to dislike this film, but it's got a decent message.
Okay. So if you dig deep enough and find that message, then it's decent. But as far as like the plot and the meandering nonsense side quests that for whatever reason, they go to Cairo in a plane that can probably only actually go 500 to 600 miles on a tank of gas, but it's got to go 5,800 miles. So not only was the invisible jet, it had an invisible jet refueler going along with it. And it could somehow get all the way to Cairo and back overnight. It was pretty impressive feat of logic in the story there.
Well, and it was a museum plane that they just grabbed and was fueled up and in perfect working mechanical condition. And you could just, and then Steve Trevor, who was a pilot from World War One, can just jump in and fly a modern jet. No problem. No worries.
No problem. No problem.
It's all about air currents. Once you understand air and how things just float through the air, you can just fly. That's the takeaway there.
All right. So Jose, let's go to you for your take on the opening. And then did you also find that the feminist basically like laying down for the patriarchy in this one, as Robert saw?
I didn't necessarily pick that up, but I mean, I guess I wasn't necessarily looking for it either. Overall, this movie I liked, but I will admit it's not good, but I don't think it's bad either. I think it took a shot at some things that didn't land. To me, this almost came off like an homage to like the Silver Age of comics and like also kind of like the just 80s, 70s, 80s comics in general, like comic book movies in general, because it kind of reminded me like old school Superman movies. So I kind of was a little more forgiving with some of the silliness of like kind of shitty plot points and, you know, kind of like, you know, you saw some powers that just randomly manifested like, oh, now I can fly and, you know, I can make things invisible, which I kind of forgave for that reason because that's kind of was almost a shtick of that, but I don't think it necessarily landed well, and I could see why. I don't think that's your. I mean, maybe I'm seeing stuff in it that other people aren't, or that they didn't even mean to put it in there. I mean, that's just what I got out of it. I think this was actually. I mean, this is kind of an ending thing, so I don't necessarily want to get into it too much. But I think this could have been a really good Superman movie, and I'll kind of get into that later. Why this would be a good Superman movie, but not a good Wonder Woman movie. I think they kind of missed the point of the character of Wonder Woman in a lot of ways, and it kind of pissed me off. But we'll get into that later.
Yeah,
yeah. Wonder Woman develops powers in this movie, and things just kind of happen, just because the plot they need to happen for the plot, and so it feels very much unearned.
Yeah, but that's why I said it felt like a Silver Age comic thing, because that was a thing with Superman back then where he just randomly be like, oh, I can make multiple versions of myself or whatever. And it was just like kind of just rolled with it, you know. But this, it just didn't land necessarily. I felt like that's what they're going for, but it didn't land.
The very first scene in the mall felt very slapstick. And they seemed to set the tone like, oh, okay, so this is going to be a wacky, slappy, dancey comedy type movie. But then the next bits weren't. So I wasn't sure. I mean, it's all a little bit over the chop tonally.
Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure. It's hard to know what you're going to get when they have like an opening like that. And they actually had two different openings and neither one of them really had anything to do with the rest of the film. And after watching this, I wanted to rewatch the first one again, just to like kind of, you know, bone up on what to talk about here. And the first time I watched Wonder Woman from 2017, I didn't really like it all that much. But after watching this movie and then watching Wonder Woman 2017, I really enjoyed Wonder Woman 2017. Just in the relative comparison between the two, it makes Wonder Woman 1 look so much better. The stakes seem so much higher. The message is so much stronger. It's an anti-war film. It's about people being driven to fight due to Ares. It feels like there's real consequences at play. There's a lot of things going on. It's an origin story. It's fish out of water. It's coming of age. So you actually have an arc with character. And it's actually quite a bit of fun. This one, I don't know what they were trying to do. I think they're trying to say, okay, last movie, war bad. Men are, you know, prone to war and that's bad. So women are great. But in this one, it seems like they're sort of going after greed and wanting more is bad. The go-go 80s capitalism is bad. But it doesn't really have the same weight. Like they mention some kind of obscure god, the god of tricksterism or jokes. So that there's some kind of twist on these things, but it's not a well-known god, at least as far as I'm aware, as Ares. I mean, Ares is, you know, if you know anything about Greek mythology, you're going to know who Ares is. Well, I couldn't even tell you who the god in this one is. And there's actually no confrontation with that god, as far as I'm aware. It's just Mando takes this, you know, monkey shine stone and becomes the wishing thing, right? It's the monkey's paw, it's Aladdin's wishes kind of thing where, be careful what you wish for, that whole stuff. But, you know, I even had problems with that. Like, it makes no sense to me that people are going to be making these wishes and then be obligated to give up something totally unawares. Like, there's no bargain being struck. There's no consideration happening here. These are totally unenforceable contracts that Mando is giving out to these people saying, hey, make a wish. And, oh, by the way, now all your oil is mine. Ha, ha, ha. It's like, how does that make any sense at all? You know, that wasn't even
right. And it's just whatever he wanted. It wasn't necessarily, it wasn't necessarily proportional to what the person wished for. Like one guy wished for a coffee and like, what did he lose? We don't know. Like Wonder Woman wished for Steve Trevor back. Well, everybody else wished for things that are just popping into existence. Like a giant wall appears, nuclear bombs just appear, nuclear missiles just appear out of nowhere. Like just shit just appears, but somehow Trevor like has to get reincarnated into this body of a dude that's already alive for some reason.
Get Out style. It's like Get Out where they took over the guy's body and then she rapes that body.
Yeah. Yeah. That guy doesn't have a choice in anything that's happening. And then she loses her powers slowly over time. Whereas everybody else, like one guy wishes for like a lady to die and she like dies instantly. What about people whose wishes contradict each other or like, I wish for this person to be alive and another person wishes that same person dead. Like, we don't know. None of this makes any sense. And then ending.
Why did Mando's son's wish come true right away? Hey, Dad, I wish you were here.
Well, he'd already had his one wish. Oh,
yeah. You would be great. But Cheetah gets two wishes for some reason where everybody else only gets one.
Who got two wishes?
Cheetah.
Oh, but right? he said the it was dumb, but he that he, like a it bargain, wasn't a yeah. wish. That was the bargain. He got, and his whole thing was he became the Dreamstone, which this isn't even like a comic book thing that I know of. This is just some shit they made up for the movie. But it was the whole idea was that he, since he was a Dreamstone, he got to choose the random fucking negative effects, and they can always renounce it. So there was that. But it was pretty retarded. that was supposed to be obviously just a thing to drive the plot forward and not to be overthought about. But they kind of created a whole bunch of plot issues for themselves with that. Yeah, and the Steve Trevor thing really kind of like threw me for a loop because I thought they were going to go somewhere with that and they didn't. And it was also like, why is it that this thing can do crazy reality warping in other ways, but for some reason he has to take over a body? It made no sense to me. It served no purpose for the plot, really, to have him take over a body other than to throw you for a loop and make you think they're going to go somewhere with that and then they don't.
Yeah, and yeah. The whole movie, they've got these people, it's set during, you know, Reagan 80s. And you have the whole nuclear crisis with Russia and you've got these people protesting, hey, no nukes. And not a single person wishes for no more nukes. Really? What?
Yeah. Yeah. And with that broadcast service thing that touches everyone. I mean, on a technicality, he's going to consider that touching. I mean, it's not like it's Joe Biden up there, you know, sniffing people and actually touching them. They're using the language of touching with this beaming technology from the satellite.
Yeah, that part pissed me off, because you could use the same logic to say sound waves. Just you don't need to touch, because it's, you know, there are particles in the air that, you know, are sort of touching each other or whatever. It's just that made no goddamn sense to for me or anyone who has a basic understanding of science.
Right. Yeah. And then like, if he's giving out these wishes, like, what's his point of giving out all these wishes? Like, yeah, he's taking stuff from them that they're not agreeing to. But if he's like losing his health as a result of giving out these wishes, it seems like it's like wearing him down. Why doesn't he earlier on wish for that health or bargain that health away from those people? Why does he have wait till he's immunity? Yeah. Right? Why does he wait till he's on death's door to do that? And why does he need to do it to, you know, 5 billion people or whatever the, you know, population of the Earth was in 1984? It didn't make a whole lot of sense other than just greed and more, more, more.
Yeah, it didn't make any sense at all.
I mean, the Dreamstone wasn't deteriorating as it was granting wishes. Just when he became the Dreamstone, it started harming him physically. It didn't make any sense.
If you were to look at it from an economic sense, it wouldn't make sense to blow your wad all at once and try to do everybody at the same time, because now you just used up all your wishes, and now you've, you know what I mean? And now it's like every person gets one wish. So say you want something later, it's like, what, you don't know. Also, now you don't know who you did it to, so... You know, there might be some people who didn't, you know, wish on your little broadcast, but I don't know. It was pretty dumb. There are a lot of stupid plot points. Like I said, I kind of forgave a lot of it, because I kind of initially got a Silver Age vibe, where it was kind of like the time in comics where you're just like, whatever, we're just rolling with it and having fun. And so I kind of let a lot of that go. But yeah, they're definitely, looking back when they didn't seem to land with that, and then looking back after watching them, kind of like, then it pisses me off more when it didn't quite land with that Silver Age, you know, vibe. It kind of just didn't make sense. You know what I mean? Because I kind of shifted into a generic comic book movie at the end.
So initially you were having fun with it, but then you realized you weren't even having fun with it. So then all the dumb stuff that you forgave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Came back to bite you. Yeah. And now when I saw the trailer for this a couple of months ago, and it was like the one that was like really playing hard on the 1984 nostalgia, you know, like Stranger Things came out and was a big hit recently. And I'm sure that played into, you know, the whole nostalgia for the 80s and playing on that whole trope. And they do a bit of that in this, but
it didn't lean into it.
It wasn't enough.
It didn't lean into it at all. There was some fashion stuff. There was one scene with Steve Trevor where he was putting on the parachute pants and stuff. But where was the music? You watch like Stranger Things, and you very much get a vibe of, hey, yeah, this is the 80s. Here's all the music. This is what's going down. This movie, I didn't feel that at all. I felt that there were some people. This could have been set really out almost any time other than the technology.
Yeah, a couple of trailers had some of that music too that I was like, okay, cool. I'm kind of, you know, I was kind of expecting to get at least a cool soundtrack out of this. Because I'll be honest, the part of the reason too why I didn't really get so upset with this movie is I wasn't expecting much. I know a lot of people love the first Wonder Woman. I thought the first Wonder Woman was okay. I think the first Wonder Woman people thought was awesome because DC was sucking ass at that point. So they produced a decent movie and everyone blew it up to be something amazing. And so I think that's also why I think people panned this movie so badly to where they're like hated on this so much, is because they had such high expectations from the previous Wonder Woman, which I did not have, because I was just like, this is just a good, decent movie. And so I wasn't expecting an amazing movie from this one. You know,
I was right there with you. When I first saw the first one, I thought, oh, it's okay. It's not great. And so I didn't have high expectations for this one other than seeing that trailer that made it look great and very, you know, 80s throwback. And then I watched this movie and I was very disappointed. But then I went back and watched the other one, and it really makes the other one look so much better, just in contrast. You might consider going back and watching the first one and just seeing how vastly different it is. I mean, it feels like there's a coherent story in the first one. They're actually telling you something, and there's a strong, you know, the anti-war message is really great in it. This one just feels like it's all over the shop.
Yeah, I would have to agree with both of you in terms of not having any expectations for this film. So whatever it was going to be, I was going to hopefully find something to enjoy about it. But, that first mall scene, The beginning scene on Themyscira with her as a little girl, I passionately hated. The fact that she's just born the daughter of Zeus and that she can run and swim faster than these grown women really kind of was like, man, I really hate this.
I mean, at least she got pulled away so she couldn't win because she cheated or whatever. Yeah, she's defeated.
What was the message there, though? That, Robert, what was the message? What was the point of that? To what was the lesson she learned then as a child?
Something. I don't know. You tell me. Something truth.
I think they missed the point of, like, I kind of alluded to this earlier, but I think they missed the point of the character of Wonder Woman. And, like, I feel like with a lot of comic book characters, like, when it comes to adaptations from comics to movies and what have you, I think the most important thing for me, at least, I know a lot of people are sticklers about staying true with, like, whatever you're doing, but for me, the biggest thing is about staying true to the character. And I think every character has their, you know, is their own character. And for Wonder Woman, I think they were trying to be like, oh, she's about truth. And that's not, Wonder Woman's a warrior. Like, and that's why I was getting at earlier how this is, they kind of made this a super, like, this could have been a good Superman movie because Superman is about hope. And I got a vibe of hope, truth, all that, you know, la la shit in this, but that's not Wonder Woman is. Wonder Woman is someone who's willing to make the tough decisions. And not to get, I mean, I guess we're at a good point where we kind of go into it, but the end, I really feel like she should have killed Maxwell Lord because that's what her character is. She would have, and she did in the comics, it was a big part of her character. She would have killed Maxwell Lord because that was the decision that needed to be made. And instead, they just did some, you know, powder puff bullshit with, you know, hope and truth and all that nonsense, which would be good for a Superman movie, like especially like if you're going for a Silver Age vibe, because that is what Superman's character is about. But instead, they gave the Wonder Woman fucking storyline to Superman in the first Man of Steel and vice versa. So yeah, I was definitely disappointed that they kind of missed the point there of what Wonder Woman character is about. I think that's what that opening scene was, to be like, oh, she's about hope, truth, all this, you know, la la good feelings bullshit, which is, that's what Superman is, not what Wonder Woman is.
Yeah, Jose, yeah,
I think Patty Jenkins got interviewed and she talked about her inspiration for this film being like Richard Donner, Superman 1, that kind of thing. I don't think she landed it very well, but I think your point is correct that this would have been a better Superman film. But go ahead, Daniel.
Yeah, so speaking to the characters themselves, when I think you were doing, had me on your show for an interview and we talked about maybe doing Wonder Woman 84, you said, oh yeah, the bad guy is Maxwell Lord. That might be interesting. Now, I'm not a comic book guy per se, so I don't know who Maxwell Lord is as a character from the comics, but what about Maxwell Lord excited you, and did they pull off a Maxwell Lord in this that is anywhere near what you were expecting from the comics?
For certain comic book characters, they have moments that are their moment and that kind of are wrapped up in their character. For example, what's a good one? Not Scott Lang, Michael Douglas's character in Ant-Man, Hank Pym. His whole thing was he created Ultron in the comics, and that was a big part of his character. He also was known for beating his wife. Those are his only two main things. One of Wonder Woman's main, like, most well-known things in comics is her killing Maxwell Lord, because he, in the comics, it's kind of bullshit how he gets the power, but whatever. He has mind control, like the power to control minds in it, and he's like super powerful. I think he has like Batman and Superman or something fighting each other, and he's causing all sorts of havoc. And essentially, Wonder Woman gets her hands on him. And she has the lasso of truth on him, and she's like, so he has to tell the truth, you know, and he's saying that if you let me go, I will do it again. I will keep doing this. I will keep making people kill each other, blah, 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 blah. I will not stop. And she fucking kills him. She breaks his fucking neck. She kills him. And like, so that was like, and for her, that's what her character is about, making the hard choice, doing what needs to be done. Like, she is not the Batman. She's not the Superman. That's what makes her special in the trilogy. She is the one who's willing to do the shit that needs to be done. Whereas the boys are all about like, oh, we can't kill people. Ugh. Where she's a more grounded character in that way. And we're going to do what we got to do. And this is what we got to do. And that was why I was excited about Maxwell Lord, because it's kind of an important moment for her character. Like, he even comes back later in the comics to be like, to haunt her, you know, because, you know, every character comes back from the dead in the comics. But yeah, that was a big character moment for her in the comics. So I was like excited to see that, because I was like, that was kind of, could be something to shape her character going forward. But they kind of just said, fuck it, and just didn't. And they kind of gave her the generic Superman, you know, rah, rah, you know, happy thoughts and feelings. And that was what they gave her, you know?
Yeah. So after rewatching the first one, they kind of did that ending already with Ares. Ares was going to keep messing with man and make man fight endless wars. And so then she does kill him. Cause you know, she's the secret weapon, the God killer. So I can see why maybe they didn't do that same thing again for Maxwell Lord, but not knowing the Maxwell Lord story, it's I don't know. Now that I know, it's like, okay, well, why'd they do what they did? And maybe it makes a bit of sense because it would be like the exact same thing she just did in Wonder Woman from 2017. But
with the kid, they were saying, oops, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. But I thought with the kid too, they were just setting you up for a further fall. Because when they had the kid, the whole Alistair character, which I kind of like, you kind of don't really care that much about it, as bad as that may sound. I kind of thought they were just setting you up to be crushed even more when he gets killed. But you to be like, to be a controversial moment. But no, they just, I don't know. I just don't know why they made that choice.
Yeah. Now, based on what you know from the comic book version of Maxwell Lord, I mean, did they do it justice at all?
I don't know. I'm not a huge Wonder Woman fan. I don't know a ton about Maxwell Lord. I just know that was a big moment for a character. And yeah, I mean, I know you said they already did the Ares moment, but I feel like it was different in the comics because there's such a big power differential between Wonder Woman and Maxwell Lord because he has no physical powers. He was just, he's kind of almost like a character that controls things behind the scenes. So for her to be this powerhouse and just to break his neck like she did was kind of it was almost like a killing a bunny type thing in a way. Whereas with Ares, it's like this is a legitimate, you know, even though Maxwell Lord in the comics was a legitimate threat because he could control minds and, you know, make Superman do shit that he wants him to do and stuff like that. But it just had a different vibe to it. Yeah.
Right. The Ares thing is a god versus a god, you know, like really duking it out kind of stuff. Yeah. Robert, what'd you think of the Wildcats ho with Chitara showing up in this? Is that a throwback to the 80s at all for you?
Well, I mean, the cheetah villain. I mean, generally, I like Kristen Wiig. Generally, I don't remember anything from anybody talking about. You know, it's not like a character I'm excited about seeing. I thought she was handled pretty damn poorly. I thought the CGI was awful. I thought their fight was awful. The fight inside the White House was okay. It was pretty good. But the final fight with her in the armor and then cheetah lady slashing around and whatnot, I thought was pretty terrible. I didn't understand why Wonder Woman, like Cheetah, got electrocuted, but then Wonder Woman didn't, even though they're in the same water. I didn't understand that.
Wonder Woman's a god, and like, she, you remember in the first one, she could go into that village that got the gas. Right, but she could go into the village that got bombed with the gas. It was killing everyone.
Well,
she could just walk in
all over the shop. I mean, at some point she can get shot and at other points she can't. What is she actually at? At one point she can't fly, then she can fly because of the power of positive thinking or something. What was it? I didn't understand. Like, I understand that there's different, every director has got kind of a different level of power for their heroes, right? Like the Man of Steel Superman is a different power level than Christopher Reeve Superman. But even Wonder Woman, I mean, in the comics, I've seen Wonder Woman fight toe-to-toe with Superman and even beat him, like, almost sometimes. At no point in this movie did I think that she could even hold a candle to Superman. She would just get her ass handed to her easily. If she's having trouble fighting these little thugs and different people, I mean, even Cheetah character, I mean, are you kidding me? She's just a person with, like, cheetah powers? And then she said she was an apex predator. Cheetahs are not apex. Sorry. But okay, so let me talk a few things about the things that I hated. Some of the few just little nitpick scenes that just add up to this whole gestalt of why I didn't like the film.
Okay, Robert's rant commence.
Just forgive me. I'm going to be a little self-indulgent here. In the very opening scene in the mall, she makes a point to be like, the robbers got guns. And she comes in and she's like, I don't like guns. And one guy pulls out a gun and like this old lady goes, gun! There's a human being with a gun. I hate that shit. I hate that shit in movies because, you know, regular people can't have guns. But of course, if that was like a cop or somebody, they could have a gun, no problem. Nobody gives a shit. But regular person has a gun. Oh my God. But then the clone comes Wonder Woman, who's like, I don't like guns. And she takes it away from him and she breaks it or whatever. She grabs it, she smashes it. And I'm like, okay, says the privileged, immortal, invulnerable superhero god. She doesn't need to have a gun. But maybe us mortal people that actually have to defend ourselves, we might need to have a weapon to protect ourselves because we're not all immortal superhero gods, okay? So screw you, Wonder Woman. Then,
but, like, remember when Kristen Wiig's character was getting catcalled constantly, like dozens of guys catcalling her on a single city block, and then some guy like tries to rape her. Yeah, she would need a gun to defend herself, right?
But it says she has Wonder Woman to protect her.
Right.
But which you would think that. But... And then another thing in this movie, like every man is a piece of shit in this film. Like every man's like this potential leering rapist guy, except for Steve Trevor. So that's fun. But the next thing I wanted to talk about, I mean, other than, you know, at one point, like she's like the cheetah, the dumb Kristen Wiig character. And she plays this like in like the Wonder Woman or the Ghostbusters movie too, where she's like the nerd and she has the glasses and she takes the glasses off and then she's a smoking hot chick. It's really a tired trope that, man, that's man, so played out.
But this time she's walking heels now.
Walking heels. Now, let me just talk about this one scene that I really hated. So there's finally the Wonder Woman and her boyfriend have flown across the ocean in their dumb jet that would never have made it. Apparently she can manifest fuel, but they finally are going to meet, right? Maxwell Lord is going to see Wonder Woman and it's going to be like the scene where he's like, holy shit, there's this, the hot chick from the Smithsonian has got like superpowers and she's like trying to chase me down and get me. What? Are you kidding me? I just randomly ran into some lady at the thing and she's like a Wonder Woman. Cause she doesn't exist in this universe, right? She's like a secret. Nobody knows about her. So people should be losing their shit when they see this woman jumping and flying and doing all this crazy crap. But Maxwell Lord sees her and he goes, you guys shoot him. They're chasing after us. Get him, boys. That's good your comment. Reaction to seeing the hot chick from the Smithsonian chase after you and track you down in the middle of the desert? That should be like the last thing he would have thought to ever see is the hot chick from the Smithsonian in the middle of the desert chasing him down in the middle of his, like, I'm going to get my oil scheme. But it was just like, he didn't even act like it was a thing. Like he knew it was going to happen. And maybe I missed something where he knew she was Wonder Woman, but I don't think so. Did you guys remember a scene where he figured out that she was Wonder Woman or he knew? Because anyway,
but the whole Cairo scene was totally unnecessary. Lord had no reason to go there other than greed. Wonder Woman had no reason to go there at all, nor the means to get there. And then them just happenstance to see each other on the highway where kids happen to play soccer or football, as they call it in that part of the world, in the middle of the highway. Middle of the
desert, just playing in the highway.
This is
no
like,
other room to do it, so you have to do it on the highway.
Right. This is like in Last Jedi. Yeah, Last Jedi, where they went on the diversion to the casino planet to say capitalism bad and greed bad. This whole trip to Cairo made no sense other than to save the kids from the highway. Who shouldn't have been there in the first place. Bad parenting. Just want to say that. And to have this wall, which I got to assume was a dig at Trump because Orange Man bad. And this movie was shot in like 2018.
Yeah, it's funny. I do feel like a lot of people brought up when this was first coming out how, you know, making comparisons between Pedro Pascal's character and Trump. But I didn't get that at all. I know a lot of people still tried to make that a thing. But I didn't get that at all from his character. But I don't know. It was silly. I don't really know what to add to.
Yeah, he's just a slick TV personality who's like playing a bit of a confidence game, though he seems to believe that he is close to getting a strike or whatever. But he doesn't actually have one, but he has to sort of, you know, act as if he does. And I know they were going for that 80s, you know, schmarmy, cocaine fueled greed vibe thing, but they didn't go hard enough to really land that point. You know,
yeah, I mean, they did have Reagan saying more is better and more nukes and that kind of thing, right? But I don't know, it just didn't, to your point, I don't think it really landed that hard.
Speaking of the Reagan thing,
we're having a trouble even deciding what the actual theme of the film is. Maybe it tried to do too many things or it's a little bit over the shop. I don't know.
I think it's all of those things. But the other Reagan point I had was he wished for more nukes closer to Russia or the USSR at the time, which seems kind of dumb, but he got it. And then they viewed that as a positive or a violation of
threat.
Whatever, you know, right. Like an aggression. And he said, oh, we'd fire at them for less. That didn't make sense to me either. Like the Cuba Missile Crisis happened. Nobody fired any nukes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, why 20 years later would that have been like the thing? Like, just because, I mean, if that's the thing, even in the 80s, and maybe it wasn't as much in place at the time, but as far as I'm aware, there was the Eastern Bloc, and then there was U.S. bases all the way around the middle of Europe and in Turkey and all of these places.
Yeah, Turkey, Hungary, yeah, Germany.
You know, all with, you know, armaments and military bases and all of these things, all with a stone's throw from the USSR.
Yeah, it was just definitely a silly wish because it's a it was definitely historically illiterate there because it's like, yeah, I mean, he could have just had more. I'm not a huge history buff, but I'm pretty sure the only thing really holding him back from having more nukes at that point was just treaties and, you know, and the fact that he didn't want to start a nuclear war. So, I mean, it seemed kind of silly to think that somehow if I wish it, it makes it not start a nuclear war. I don't know. It just it was pretty dumb. Also, you want let's keep in mind the events of this thing weren't just wiped away by everyone wishing away their wishes, because they even showed that people were referencing, oh, these nukes are just disappearing. So that is another thing that I'm like, I know you kind of forgive it, but it is like, how the fuck did this not come up in one of the later movies, you know, in the timeline? Like, because you'd think something that insanely magnificent would somehow be referenced, especially because I think there was a whole thing where like Batman was trying to find the other metahumans and like, it was like, yep, you know, they were like hidden kind of deal. And like, but you'd think Wonder Woman would be the easy one. Like, oh, well, remember this ridiculous fucking event that happened? Oh yeah, she was at the center of it. But no, like you'd think that would have came up in some way, shape or form. That one's a little hard to forgive. I mean, sometimes you could just be like, oh, they don't show up for one reason or another, but that's just kind of like, that would be the most insane day on earth. How the fuck did this not come up? You know, I don't know.
Yeah. Remember that one time when we almost had thermonuclear war and that one time everybody's wishes were granted? Remember that one time, Bruce, you wished your parents back alive and then they were, and then for some reason they told you to wish them away again and you did.
And you got shot again.
Now, was the whole point of reversing the wishes like everyone had to, like you had to have like literally everyone unwished?
That's what I took away. I don't know. I guess, right?
So what's the message there? Don't wish for stuff?
You can take backsies. I guess.
I think they were trying to loosely tie that into the whole truth thing at the beginning. They really try to ham fist. I feel like they like, I don't know if they just like made this up on the fly, but they had that like intro scene, that Wonder Woman thing was pretty cool. I think, I know you didn't like it, Robert, but it was kind of well done, but it just didn't really seem to tie in. The biggest thing I didn't like about it was it didn't tie into the plot at all. It was like, but that felt like they kind of ham fisted were kind of like a truth. And I think that's what they got out of the whole like wishing thing, that like, I don't remember what her line was, but something along the lines of like, you know, I don't know, truth will prevail or some bullshit. And it's kind of like, I think that's what they're getting at, is like these wishes aren't the truth kind of deal. But it was just, it was such a weak connection that it was just like, because I remember at one point at the end, she said like a line she said in that one intro scene, or that was said to her. And it was just kind of like, really, that's why you had that one whole big scene that just seemed completely out of place. I mean, I liked it, like I said, but it just didn't make sense to me at all. So like,
you're right, the connection was tenuous at best. When that should have happened, when she says the line, we all should have felt something. We all should have been like, oh yeah, oh so good, yeah, that's right, Wonder Woman. It should have hit us. Instead, it just passes you by and you're like, wait, what? That was why you had that scene in the beginning? What? Okay,
it was a long scene.
It was so a lot kinda... it was a lot to commit to. It should have really hit home when it paid off, like, right? I mean, that was a big setup.
Yeah,
that's a huge setup. I mean, this is something integral to her character that happened in her childhood that comes back to help her defeat this mega villain at the end of this movie. It should have had a really strong impact on the audience, and I didn't feel anything.
Oh, and I hated how the way they defeated him was with the lasso of truth, which was just like, it just seems so silly to me. I mean, I get that he was just, I'm assuming they were insinuating that he was saying the truth. I don't remember what he even said at that point. It took me a minute to even connect those dots when I saw it happening. Like, really, you're doing that? You're just having the lasso of truth make him say that? I don't know. I guess even in my wildest dreams, even with a Silver Age like spin on it in my head, I still just couldn't be like, oh, everyone would renounce their every 350. Well, actually, that's America's population. Was it 6 billion on the planet, or however many? Well, I guess we can say billions of people renounce their wish because Superman, or because she put the lasso of truth on the bad guy and he said how bad it was. Because I mean, I don't know. I know me, if I had wished some amazing shit, And like, I'd probably be like, well, I don't know. Let's see how this plays out before I renounce this shit.
Like, yeah. Mom. I guess you get your cancer back because Wonder Woman told me to do something. I don't know.
Yeah. Like if my dick got blown off and I wish for it back, I'm sorry. I'm gonna see what the negative effects are here first.
See how this plays out, because kind of liking it.
So we're back to the Kristen Wiig character, and then we need to start winding down. I think. Did you buy the she's on Team Wonder Woman until Wonder Woman's like, hey, you gotta give up your wish of being like super awesome like me, and then she just pulls a total like. Fuck no, I'm not going back to be this mousy, squirrely librarian type who nobody likes. Like, it's totally this ego thing.
Right. I didn't buy it at all, but I heard someone talking about it saying that when you wish for something, you lose what is most important to you or something like that. And what was most important to the Kristen Wiig character was her loyalty and her sweetness. And so she loses that, and that's why she turns. I think it's a bit of a stretch, but, and I don't think it works in the movie, but I guess if you want to ex post facto justify it to yourself in your own mind, I guess it kind of works a little bit, but when it was happening, no, it was like, why are you turning on your friend now at this point after you found out that she's Wonder Woman or has these superpowers?
Yeah. Don't you think that even if you reversed your wish, you would still have gone through this experience and like, now you know that you have this super awesome friend and maybe that friendship blossoms and, you know, some of that rubs off on you and you get to do cool stuff. And like her life is not going to be the same as it was before all of these events, even if she unwinds that stupid wish of being like her, even though she didn't know what she was really wishing for other than, you know, oh, she's beautiful and like has grace or whatever. And people like her.
Yeah, they didn't seem to have a consistent metric on what got taken away. And I know you were saying it was like the thing you valued most, but it didn't seem to be that. It seemed just to be random shit. And I think that's kind of why Maxwell Lord got to be the one who dictated it later when he became the Dreamstone. But yeah, I know. Right. I think the Cheetah character, really, there's the whole theme of this movie to me is missed opportunities. There were so many like things that it went for, but didn't quite land. And I think Cheetah was another one. Because another thing in the comics, I mean, Cheetah and Wonder Woman are both characters who fall victim to having multiple origin stories and kind of being all over the place and with their powers and whatever. But Cheetah, one of her stories, one of the ones is she's kind of like they play on the whole theme of her being friends with Wonder Woman and jealousy and so on and so forth. So they kind of hit that beat a little bit, but it didn't quite land. Like, I really wish it was almost like, for one, if they'd made some different choices or if they had given these characters both their own movie. You know, as the main villain, but obviously they were going for, oh, we have Maxwell Lord, who's the fucking, you know, like he's more of the plot villain, you know, not the fisticuffs villain, not the one you fight with. And she gets to be the one you fight with. I mean, I don't know. I just feel like they fell flat in a lot of spots. I really wish they had spent more time building up her character, but it was already a long movie to begin with. So I just feel like picking these two characters, if they just wanted a generic character to be the one to fight with Wonder Woman, maybe they should pick somebody else that no one gives a fuck about. But Cheetah kind of has a little bit of a history. She's probably one of the more famous Wonder Woman villains. So to use her just in conjunction with another famous one, Maxwell Lord, in an already long movie, it's kind of the Spider-Man 3 effect where it's like you have all these like good villains that you're throwing at the hero and you're not really establishing why these are good villains. Because being a good villain isn't just being like, oh, you can kick ass or whatever. It's you kind of build up like what is the tension between these characters or whatever, you know?
So, right. So you're saying this could have been better if it was just Maxwell Lord or just Cheetah and like cut an hour out of the movie.
Yeah. I can completely understand why they wanted her to have someone to fight with. Because it would be kind of fucking boring if it was just Maxwell Lord and her. Because it is like his thing in the comics, he controls minds. And in this, he has the Dreamstone. I mean, kind of sort of similar-ish. But like, I could see how it would be like that you want to see fights. And how are you going to have fights? I mean, I guess maybe you could have had Cheetah in this as well, but not really be a villain. You know, maybe her powers start to manifest. I mean, there's different ways you could go. And maybe he controls her mind to make her fight. I know there's different ways you could go. Because I understand how if you have a superhero movie with no super heroics, it's kind of like, what the fuck am I watching here? I mean, you gotta have something there. It can't just be this thriller or whatever, you know, like people come for a superhero movie. You got to give it to them. So if you just have a guy that controls minds, it's like, what are we doing here?
Right. I get your point about that, but I still am a huge advocate for telling a simple story in an interesting way. And this movie is like this bloated, complex mess that feels very slapped together of all these different elements and different characters and different scenes in different places. And there's really no strong through line. I would much rather see a smaller story with higher emotional intensity between two characters that mean, like, you know, right? Like you were talking about, like two characters that mean something to each other. And then there's some real connection that gets broken or whatever. That was not in this film. I think it was, they tried to do too much. And in the end, it was this bloated, overlong film that left me feeling empty. It just didn't, there's nothing in this movie that I'm going to remember in a week's time, let alone a year's time. There's no key scene where you're like, fuck yeah, you know, there's just nothing like that. I even remember the scene in the first movie, maybe because it was in the trailer, but in the scene where she jumps out of the trenches and she puts the shield up and then she's blocking all the machine gun bullets that, you know, they're not shooting at her legs at all. But you know what I mean? Like even that scene is like this iconic scene where you remember that she was doing this heroic action to break this trench warfare. You know, that's something. And in this movie, there is nothing, just nothing to hang your hat on. This is the scene that makes this movie. All of this stuff is leading up to this. Like even the climax is like, what was that? Like she's running into this room and he's giving this televised speech and she's stopped by this gust of wind or something. And she's trying to lasso him, but the wind is blocking her. Even though before she was using the lasso to like catch airplanes and then swing off of airplanes.
And lightning bolts.
It was just so all over the shop that you just like sit back and you're just like, well, I'm just going to watch the pretty images because I have no emotional connection to anything that's happening.
Can you imagine though if in that moment, I mean, you know, had the generic, you know, force fieldy bullshit, you know, but instead of the whole like she wrapped his leg and made him say the truth, she just threw out the lasso and broke his neck. Can you imagine the effect that would have in front of the world?
Killed him. Yeah. Yeah. Just punched his head off.
That would have had more of an impact. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And especially because it's being broadcasted to the world. And then now you have that impact of like, holy shit, who is this? I mean, I guess it would fuck with the continuity, you know, because there's future stuff. But like, assuming it didn't, it's like now you have this character who just murdered someone live on TV in front of the entire world. And, you know, just what looks like a savage to everyone else. But for her, she knew she had to. Like, that would have had so much more impact than the bullshit.
It would have been interesting. And this movie doesn't do anything interesting.
No.
Yeah, you know, that would have been great because then in Wonder Woman 3, which just got confirmed based on the strength of how this is doing, apparently, then you would have had Wonder Woman, the person who killed someone on TV. Yeah.
Yeah. She's got to clear her name or do something heroic to get back in people's good graces or whatever the fuck, some kind of redemption arc.
That was always what I liked about her character. She's the one willing to make the tough choices, whereas Superman and Batman are not, because she's like part of the holy trilogy of DC, and like that is like her distinguishing thing is she is willing to make those decisions. That is their character, that they are not, you know, we'll find another way. I don't want to become, you know, if you kill a killer, then there's, you know, the same amount of killers or whatever the fucking stupid quote from Batman is, which, I mean, whatever. I like Batman, but it's kind of like, in realistically speaking, it's kind of retarded to like not cross that line. But Wonder Woman's one who does that. And they didn't show that. I feel like they don't really understand the character they're dealing with. And I feel like that's been a through line for DC in general. So,
yeah, it seemed like they wanted in the effort to please everybody and please nobody at the same time. You're making these safe decisions that are just completely uninteresting. I don't know. Maybe you're trying to make it appeal to a wide audience. Maybe little children would have been like, oh my God, mommy, Wonder Woman just killed that guy. That would have been an interesting decision or a discussion to have with your kids. Hey, why do you think that was justified? What do you think about that? That's pretty crazy, right? Maybe because he was about to destroy the entire fucking planet. Maybe that's a good reason to kill somebody. I don't know.
Yeah. And I feel like it would have been weirdly hauntingly beautiful, because then you have the sun aspect of like, now the sun is sitting here like, holy shit. And yeah, I mean, and then you have this whole movie of this, you know, like light, you know, fucking like silver agey 80s-ish e fucking like slapstick kind of fucking movie. And at the end, it just takes a super dark turn. I feel like it would have been kind of make it its own thing. Whereas instead, they just It never committed to anything. It had all these, I feel like this movie had a lot of potential and just never really committed to anything, to any plot point, anything, and just never, yeah, like you said, just didn't do anything interesting.
Yeah, and that would have been a nice twist at the end. Like in the first one, they had the twist of the feeble, like, politician guy from England, Sir Patrick or whatever his name was. He was the one helping them, and he was the one calling for peace. Turns out, big reveal at the end, he's actually Ares. You know, when we think it's that German general guy. This one, no similar twist, no similar, like, revelation that somehow, you know, changes how you perceive the previous events. None of that. You know, I think that is another missed opportunity. But anyway, we're probably at the point now where we need to take the opportunity to give this thing a score. So I don't know how many we want to give lariats of truth or number of wishes, maybe. Robert, you want to give me your number of wishes out of 10 in your summary and review for Wonder Woman 84. Bonus, your take on Wonder Woman 1 as well.
Okay. Well, I'll start off with Wonder Woman 1, as much as I remember it. I remember the first two acts of Wonder Woman 1 being kind of pretty fun. I hated that third act. It just a bunch of smoke and light. And what did it even mean? What was it even about? But my big key takeaway was those first couple of battle scenes that were solid. They had some emotional impact that, because it was about, you know, she was making friends with these rebels, these underground people, and you know, she had to stop a terrible thing. You know, I really liked the design of the gas villain, right? Is that what that was? Some kind of a mustard gas villain or some kind of a poison person? Not exactly remembering perfectly, but yeah, it was something like that.
Dr. Maru with the mask thing.
I remember hating Steve Trevor infiltrating the Nazi base or the German base and making out with the notebook or whatever it was that he stole off of a table or whatever. I hated that. But and then the ending was terrible. But overall, no, that was a superior movie to this one. This one, I would say Wonder Woman 1 was a 6 out of 10, 6 golden lariats of truth out of 10. This film, like for all the reasons we've talked about, I went in with zero expectations. It's going to be whatever it was, it's going to be fine with me. But it didn't even have any kind of real identity of its own, which is what I think the first movie kind of had. This movie just tried to do too much and was all over the shop. I couldn't even tell you what it was really even about. That you can have it all? Was that one of the things? Or something truth? Is that what this movie is about? I liked that, you know, she joins the patriarchy. I think the patriarchy is too much of a sausage fest. It's nice to have some hot chicks in there. So that's nice. But this is like a 4 out of 10. A 4, it's fairly incoherent. Characters just teleport all over the place. There's no stakes really. Like when characters just can manifest powers and teleport and you know, the consequences at the end of this movie are gone for some reason. It's just magically wiped away. Then what is it we even watched? What did the characters learn? What actually happened? I mean, I guess at the end she learned that she doesn't need Steve Trevor or that there are things more important than her relationship with him. I guess this is the takeaway, but for me, it just fell flat. It tried to do too much and I had like no emotional investment in this film at all. So yeah, it's a 4 out of 10. It's I wouldn't recommend anybody really watching unless you're a diehard, you know, comic book Wonder Woman fan and you're contractually obligated to watch all these films. If I hadn't watched this for the movie, for this show, I wouldn't watch it. I would watch Wonder Woman 1 again. There were some elements there that I liked, but this one, it was just, it doesn't even have an identity. Maybe they set it in 84 to try and artificially grant some kind of identity to it, or they thought that there was going to be an identity for the film, but man, I don't know what people are going to remember out of this one.
Yeah, I think you're right. They missed on a lot of things that they should have gone to 11 on, you know, like the 80s vibe or all of these things. And they didn't really commit to anything. And they end up with this 2.5 hour bit of a bloated mess. And I'll kind of lead into my summary and review here. in contrast to the first one, which I, Robert, you just said you might watch it again. I highly recommend it. The first one, it looks so much better in contrast to this one. It has a tight story. It has strong messaging. It has the anti-war theme to it. You have the origin. You have the training that she goes through where they say, you know, never let your guard down. If you expect a battle to be fair, then you're going to lose because a battle will never be fair. The stakes just feel higher. You've got the gods fighting the gods. You've got all these things going on. This one is just all over the place. It doesn't really accomplish anything. It doesn't commit enough to any particular angle or plot line to see it through. We've got this mystery plane that can fly all the way to Cairo and back, but somehow they, you know, for whatever reason, they all happen to fly through the 4th of July fireworks over Washington, D.C. for some romantic moment. I don't really know. And Steve Trevor, she knew him for like a week, right? Back in the early, you know, World War One times. And then he died blowing up the plane at the end of that. And yet, you know, it's this huge, like, love of her life thing. Meanwhile, she's an immortal, right? So, I mean, she's going to be going through many human lifetimes as people are going to wither away as she never ages. It's just this kind of this weird situation that they just don't play into very well. So for the first movie, I would originally have given it 6 invisible airplanes. But now in light of seeing this film, I'm going to revise that score to 8 invisible refueling tankers. And the Wonder Woman 84 will get 4 invisible fuel tankers from me. So that's my score. And now we'll go to Jose for your score and your take on both films, please.
All right, I'm going to do 2 scores for each because my score changed entirely from immediately viewing till after. So like I said before, I start the first beat. I mean, it threw me for a loop with that intro in Wonder Woman 2. Didn't match, but then that one thing in the mall, it kind of gave me that Silver Age vibe. And so then for me, I was like, oh, okay. So there was some ridiculousness and some of the antics she could do, but I kind of just forgave it. Cause for me, being a little bit more, I guess, knowledgeable ish. And when it comes to comics, I'm not like a super comic nerd, but it can give me a Silver Age vibe where I was like, okay, so we're kind of just like, you know, we're just rolling with the punches, having fun. We're not overthinking this. And that's kind of what the Silver Age is. It's just, that's, anyone knows anybody about Silver Age comics? That's what it is. And so I looked at that movie through that lens through pretty much the rest of the movie. It wasn't until the end of the movie that I was kind of like, oh, that's kind of not what this was. And it kind of like, I don't know. So, but I still was looking at it through the lens. And so after finishing Wonder Woman 2, looking at it through that lens, I had like a 6.5 probably. Cause it still was like, I mean, it wasn't an amazing movie. I found it enjoyable. I thought it was kind of fun, but it was kind of dumb, but that was kind of that's kind of the vibe of Silver Age comics in general. But, and then with that, I also, my memory of the first Wonder Woman was, it was like, okay. So for me, it was like a 6. And I just remember it being like, okay, plot was kind of weak, not incredibly amazing action scenes. It was a decent movie. So it was 6. And I just remember also the big drawback for me was the CGI fuckfest at the end that was just awful, which they kind of had in Cheetah, but I actually felt like the Cheetah fight at the end was actually better than the finale of with Ares. Maybe Daniel can tell me otherwise if that's the case, because he watched both, so he can tell me if it held up, how the two compare, because a lot of people complained about the Cheetah one, but when I watched the Cheetah CGI fight at the end, I actually thought it was better than the Ares one from what I remember. But after thinking on these more and kind of like then kind of looking at it back, I probably should have gone back and watched it again, not looking at it through that lens of a Silver Age comics lens. I'm looking more like a 5.5. I still think it's an enjoyable movie that if you shut your brain off and you just watch, I mean, it's a little too long, so it does kind of fuck it up a little bit. So maybe even more closer to a 5, but I'm going to go with a 5.5. I still think it's enjoyable, especially like for me, I watch with my daughters. So it is one of those ones that's like, especially for me having daughters, I mean, it's kind of like, if you want to like a girl power type thing, it's not overly like fuck men girl power. I mean, it has a little bit of those beats, but you know, for something to watch their daughters to make them feel empowered or whatever the fuck, you know, like it's not bad. So 5.5, and then in light, you know, looking back, Daniel kind of reminded me a little bit of the original one. It kind of, I guess comparing the two kind of made me appreciate the original more. So I'm going more with like a 6 now for the original Wonder Woman. Cause yeah, it does kind of have more of a distinct, I do think Wonder Woman, the first one, could actually probably stand the test of time. I go back and I do think there are a lot of things that could be changed, but the things that should be changed about the original Wonder Woman are more like superficial stuff. Because like looking back now, those are like the CGI and stuff like that. For the most part, it actually was a fairly solid movie. It just, I think it kind of, I mean, like I said, superficial things were kind of fucked up in the original Wonder Woman. But aside from that, it had a good story, good solid story, good theme. It did, it committed to a simple story, like Robert mentioned earlier. It didn't try to be more than it was, which this 84, that's exactly what it tried to be. Tried to be more than it was. And that's the biggest thing that frustrated me about 84, is it had so much potential. There were so many different ways it could have gone with it, but they never really committed to anything, and they never did anything right. You know, maybe if they had boiled it down a little bit more, they could have gone better. Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of disappointing, and I'm not even really a big Wonder Woman fan. So, I guess I'm not too disappointed about it, but, I mean, I kind of feel bad for people who are Wonder Woman fans because they'd be let down by this. Kind of like me watching Batman vs. Superman. That was awful. But, yeah, that's really all I have to say. This, I think both movies are enjoyable. I think they're both worth watching, but they're not anything to be lauded. They're nothing fucking special, either of them, in my opinion. But they're fun. So, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for that. And I do suggest watching the other one again if you got the time. I think you'll find it's a lot tighter of a film. And the CGI actually, while not great, that end battle with Ares, you feel like there's some stakes there, and it's God versus God fighting each other. It is pretty good. It does hold up fairly well, and I think it does have some rewatchability to it, which I did not think it had the first time I saw it.
Oh, this might be a little nitpicky, but I did want to mention something Robert mentioned earlier. The whole point of Cheetah in this movie was that she wished to be like Wonder Woman. So essentially, before she even became Cheetah, the fully realized Cheetah, she was supposedly on par with Wonder Woman. So they didn't really do a good job of translating it. There's a lot of stuff that you kind of have to like overanalyze to figure it out. But essentially what they were implying by the second fight is they were implying that she was even stronger than Wonder Woman because Mando gave her a power up. And even more of a power up from being just like Wonder Woman, because her wish was to be like Wonder Woman. So they implied that she was on the same power level. So even furthermore, after he gave her power up, she should be past it, which is kind of why they made her wear the armor, which even then I still felt like the whole point of the armor was dumb, because if anything, they actually made it seem like in the fight that the armor was a hindrance. But I don't know.
Not that great.
Yeah. It was cool looking.
Yeah, and the way they introduced the armor, that was just like, Oh, what's that on the wall? Oh, that's just this mystical, magical armor that I'll wear in a few scenes. Don't worry about it. It's like,
and then I'll realize I'm better off without it.
Did it really help her a lot? I don't know. The armor was strong enough to defend against all the men, all the evil men in the world. But Cheetah, I guess, could break it with her claws. Whatever. I don't know.
I mean, they're implying she's stronger than Wonder Woman, but at the same time, I mean, her thing is speed. So I guess having a really big thing of armor would not be the one to go against someone who's like main point is being super fast.
Right. You're essentially tanking Cheetah's attacks. Yeah. I don't know.
It's dumb.
Yeah, Robert,
she didn't even know that she was going to be Cheetah, right? I mean, she just flies in and, oop, there's Cheetah. Right.
So, yeah, I guess that's true, but it didn't make any sense.
Right. Well, speaking of, the claws doing that much damage, I mean, you've seen the wall in my house right by the front door that my cat likes to scratch at. That's pretty wrecked. So, I mean, maybe there's something there. I don't know.
And that wall is made out of ancient Themysciran armor. It's true.
It's whatever Mando's armor is made out of. Valspar. I forget what it's called.
Oh, shit. This is the way.
Fun fact, in the comics, supposedly, according to DC, this is their own ranking. I think she's like top five fastest characters or something like that in DC. So she's faster than some of the Flashes, apparently, in the comics, at least. Yeah, I know. It's dumb. It doesn't make any sense. All the Flashes should be, because there's like, I don't know, 80 Flashes or something ridiculous at this point. But basically, every Flash
all
should be faster.
And then everybody else below them.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't know. I guess it makes sense if she's a Wonder Woman villain. You need someone who, I don't know. I mean, because Wonder Woman is like Superman level. So, I mean, Superman's stronger, but they always imply in the comics that they're a fair fight because of the fact that she's willing to go places Superman's not. So that's kind of why it's like she has that edge, that killer's edge, essentially.
Right.
So, yeah, well, she will fucking kill him if she has to.
No risks. And nobody dies in. Then,
I really was pissed they didn't kill Cheetah. Because, like, I mean, not that I wanted him necessarily to, but that one moment where she went to go electrocute her, she goes, "I'm sorry." And I really felt like that was her way of saying, "I'm killing Cheetah." And, like, but then she didn't. So it was just kind of like, oh, we're just doing this generic, the villain passes out and that's it. Like, it felt silly. Not that I necessarily cared whether she died or didn't. I guess with Maxwell Lord, I wanted him to die. I watched this movie start and be like, he's got to die. But like, that's the whole purpose of his character in the comics. But Yeah.
Yeah.
No, this movie is limp across the board. It makes no bold choices anywhere.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. And they could have just made it implied that Cheetah had died by just editing out the, you know, 15 seconds where she takes her out of the water. You know, she says she's sorry. She electrocutes. Boom. Cut scene. You know, we move on to other nonsense.
Post-credit. You could add a post-credit for getting up. That would have been better. No.
Yeah. Well, there was a post-credit. Did you guys see it?
Yeah. I mean, whatever. I guess it was kind of cool-ish. I don't know.
I forget what it was even. What was it? I forget. I remember seeing it.
The chick from the original Wonder Woman.
Yeah, Linda Carter. She was
Hysteria.
Yeah. Who had that golden armor.
Yeah. She was the mythical warrior that stayed back.
Maybe plays a role in, part three, but maybe not. I mean, who knows? So we'll see.
Oh, that was another thing that may have clouded my mind a little bit watching this movie. I watched a couple of the original Wonder Womans, and the original Wonder Woman, like the show, did very much have a Silver Age, old school superhero vibe where it was just silly superhero hijinks, which is kind of like whatever, you know, like, oh, she has this silly power or whatever, you know? So that's another thing where I kind of like me and my family kind of watched a couple of those episodes for fun beforehand. So that may have clouded my view a little bit watching the movie. So, cause I had that in my mind watching it. So, yeah.
Mm, and then that mall scene probably like made it seem, oh, that's the direction they're going with this.
Mm, but yep. No. That's the mall scene that threw me off. I mean, they kind of did. I don't know. They just didn't commit.
I don't know. So. It seems like it's a film of disparate scenes that are not tied together well. Like you've got the opening Themyscira scene, which is like its own movie. Then you got the mall scene, which is its own tonal movie. And then you got everything else. I mean, everything else kind of blends together, but those, for some reason, those two scenes stick out to me as like almost directed by different people. I don't know that you got the crooks that are like all wacky flying around and almost like there's banana peel sound effects and stuff. And it just seems like it's a part of a different movie.
Yeah. The mall scene, aside from the mall scene and then the scene with Trevor or whatever, where they're like looking at, I don't know, was it like art or whatever, that one scene where he's like looking at a trash can and he's like, ooh, like aside from that, the movie doesn't even have any 80s vibes really aside from that. Now that I think about it, like, and then I guess that one scene where he's about to drive the plane where it's like, oh, I know how jet engines work. But yeah, I don't know.
Yep.
Yeah.
But aside from that, it really could be held in any time period. It's like, yeah, I guess that now looking back, I guess I looked at it way too skewed with that one intro mall scene. And I kind of dug the vibe there because I'm like, oh, cool. If we're doing an 80s movie, you know, ham it up, have fun, you know, whatever, you know, let the plot be crazy and who gives a fuck, you know, just. And I guess maybe I was like looking for beats that weren't necessarily there. Maybe I was interpreting things, or maybe that's what they were intended to be. But, you know, maybe me looking at it from that perspective, I don't know. It just seems, like you said, disparate all over the fucking place. They don't know what they're doing. I don't know. There's so many different ways to look at this movie.
I think I don't know if
there's like a lot of studio interference or whatever, but, or maybe Patty Jenkins just isn't a strong enough like personality or a director to be like, no, I'm going to put my foot down. This is what I want. I don't know what happened.
Apparently she got involved in the writing process. Apparently she hadn't been taken on writing credits in a long time. And apparently she stepped up and did writing for this one. So she was one of the writers.
Jeff Johns got a credit for this.
Oh, did he? I just know Patty Jenkins. I listened to some review and they were talking about how that Patty Jenkins for the first time in decades or some shit decided to do writing. So if anything, she actually, if there's any fault to be had, it's actually, if anything, more her involvement is what it seems like. So, maybe it's a mixture of the two. Maybe it's because, I mean, it's DC. They have a knack for being known for their studio getting too involved. So, whereas Marvel seems to have more confidence in the directors within reason. Because I know there was a whole, I know there was the Ant-Man thing way back in the day, the original Ant-Man, where there was issues. I can't remember. Was it Edgar Wright? I think it was the original director for that. Edgar Wright
who was going to do it, yeah.
Yeah, and they had a whole lot of issues where it just wasn't vibing with what they wanted. And they were like, nah. I mean, that's fair. You know, I don't know. So.
Yeah, well, we're like doing a whole nother episode after we ended the episode, but we can keep going in the Kathleen Turner Overdrive bonus content that we have for our Patreon supporters at lastnightedge.com/Patreon. You guys can sign up for that, and there's other ways you can support the show, which Robert will tell you about in just a moment. But I want to mention what our next episode is going to be, and it sounds almost relevant to how you guys are talking about viewing this film. We also need to like wipe our minds clean and then watch it again, similar to what they do in Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, which is our next item up for bid on the podcast here. We're going to be doing that with the wonderful Raylene Lightheart, who has been on a couple of times in the past, and it's going to be a great discussion. This was a movie that she was excited to do, and at some point in the future, she wants to do Wayne's World, It was going to be that one or this one. And Robert chimed in and said, Wayne's World, come on, man. Come on, man.
Biden style. Come on, man. Wasn't there just like there are two guys who are trying to hold a concert in Aurora, Illinois? Isn't that what Wayne's World is? And then they do some jokes. Yeah, I don't know
hilarity ensues.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a Mike Myers fan. I'm a, you know, whatever the other guy's name is fan, Dana Carvey fan. But I just don't see a whole lot of meat on the bones. I mean, every time we've done some Blast from the Past Billy Madison movie, it's just Daniel talking about his favorite quotes and how funny this movie used to be. And it's like, okay, all right, great.
I mean, that is what Wayne's World is, just a bunch of really funny quotes. And that's about it.
Yeah. So, anyway, I remember.
All right, let's review Wayne's World. Just kidding.
Part of town, excellent.
So the adult in the room said Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. So that's what we're going to do. But Jose, why don't you remind people where they can find your work, as well as this show here, The Last Nighters, is also now featured on the Liberty Movement's YouTube channel. But give the 30-second elevator pitch again, and then we'll go to Robert for how you guys can support us here at the show.
All right, if you want to check me out, and also I guess just we have multiple people right now. We have three shows: me on the No Way Jose show. We got I'm doing the Last Nighters portion of this, so that way it's the idea being it's not that Actual Anarchy really ever honestly goes that political. I've been watching them for a decent while now. None of their episodes really go super political, but the Last Nighters ones is a little bit less, and it's kind of great for Sharon and Normie. So it kind of fit our brand over the Liberty Movement a little bit better. And we also have someone who has like a Christian Anarchy type thing, and he kind of is doing this thing where some of his episodes come with us, some of them don't, depending on what the content is. And yeah, so if you are looking for, you know, someone that has like a rotating shows or whatever, and we'll probably add more shows as time goes on and we build popularity. But yeah, the Liberty Movement for that. If you want to check me out, you can check me out on there, or you'll see more of my content here going forward, because I'm about to expand a little bit more into a little bit more in the political realm, or touch on those subjects a little bit. And I'll be on the No Way Jose YouTube channel, but I'll also be on there as well. So you take your pick, do either or both. I don't really care. Whatever, you know, do you, you know, whatever. As long as it's voluntary, I don't give a shit. But yeah, that's where you can find us.
Yeah. All right. Sounds good. And Robert, what can people do if they want to support what we do here?
As long as it's voluntary, I don't give a shit. I like that. That's exactly what I'm talking about. So, you know, you can support us in the usual ways with Patreon and YouTube and comments and talking to people and that sort of thing. But like I said last week, I just want to reiterate that, man, the best thing you can do for me right now and Daniel right now is just to live your life a normal way and to hug your friends and spend time with them and be out in public and go into stores and shop and patronize them, you know, patronize restaurants. They're struggling right now. A lot of them can't easily convert over to takeout food. So if you can go out and patronize them, that's fantastic. But the main thing is just living your life and not bowing into the social pressure. And I understand the social pressure is a lot, but resistance to tyrants normalizes resistance to tyrants. And you stick your neck out, and then another person will be emboldened by that. And then they'll be sticking their neck out. And then all of a sudden everybody's sticking their neck out, and then nobody's sticking their neck out. I saw a really inspiring video today of a lady who was basically way outnumbered. Everybody was yelling at her, telling her that she was wrong, but she was sticking to her guns and making some really strong points, and she was just done with all this. Asymptomatic spread is not a thing. We have the scientific evidence. Go out and live your life. And I understand that you want to respect the property rights of places that say, hey, you got to do this and that to be in here. And if you want to do that, fine. That's completely your choice to do that and respect their property rights. Absolutely. But a lot of these places are complying with these government mandates that if given the option, they would not be complying with this. This is just something that they're doing so that they don't get hassled by government. So this, I saw a really freaking inspiring tweet today, and I'm going to pull it up on my phone, and we are going to pause this show while I do it. Well, no, we're not going to pause it. I'm going to keep talking. But this is something that was so right on that I had to record it and keep it. And here we go. This is a tweet by the Upstate Federalist. If you think the government will ever give you an all clear to go back to normal, they will not. You have to go back to normal first. and then they will pretend they were always going to let you go back to normal. We are the leaders. They are the followers. We decide where this all goes. And then they will come along afterwards and pretend like it was their idea in the first place. So let's let freedom be that thing. And then they can pretend like they were supporting freedom all the time. So that's how you can support the show. That's my soapbox moment. And I'm probably not going to shut up about this. I'll probably sneak in like little digs about this. And as long as this crap goes on, because this is something that is very important to me, as you can imagine. And yeah, I support, I appreciate all your support and what you do. And as you can live your life, that's that makes me happy. So thank you much.
All right. Well, thank you for that. And that is really the best way to support us here, as well as your fellow human beings, being able to actually live like human beings once again, not under the boot of social pressure and thugs who at Target Liberty, Robert Wenzel likes to call them mini Maos. They're people who want to exercise power for the sake of having an opportunity to exercise power and express virtue through compliance and conformity. And those are, of course, the very dangerous things that have led to many atrocities in history. And if we're going to learn from history, we might as well avoid making the same mistakes again. But that's our episode tonight on Wonder Woman 1984 with Jose Galison of Liberty, the Liberty Movement. You can find the show notes and more at lastnighters.com/157. And we're going to get into some Kathleen Turner Overdrive bonus content available for Patreon supporters right after these messages. And we'll say goodnight from last night, everyone. Peace out. Happy New Year. Happy Christmas and all the rest. And we'll see you guys next week for Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. And good night from last night, everyone. Peace out. All right, we're going to continue the transmission for just a few more minutes on the Actual Anarchy podcast. This is episode 214 of the show. You can find the show notes more at actualanarchy.com/214. This moment is going to be brief because I want to get into the Kathleen Turner Overdrive because Jose can't be around too much longer. It's super late where he's at. He's on the East Coast, or what I like to affectionately call it, the least coast. And we're on the West Coast, otherwise known as the best coast, and if you don't count California, Washington, or Oregon. Anyway, my question was going to be related to that Get Out scene of the body being taken over by Steve Trevor, and then that person like basically being in a coma, and then having Steve Trevor's essence or soul taking control of it, similar to what they do in Get Out, and whether that is a violation of that person's body when she sleeps with him in that state. Robert, your take?
Yeah, of course it is. Yeah, he raped that guy. I don't know how else you could put it. I mean, although I think in Get Out, like he just can't control his body. A part of him is still there, right?
Like there's an awareness.
There's like an awareness, like he can see what's happening from a blurry distance and he's like screaming. No. I don't know. We don't know. We're not giving the awareness level of the guy, but clearly, I mean, Steve Trevor like animates this other person's body and does with it what he wants to, not with any consideration as to what the other guy would want. So yeah, absolutely. It's a violation of his property rights.
I just realized this is an insane metaphor for abortion. Like this is what this is. It's a complete perfect metaphor for abortion. Cause it's, I mean, Steve Trevor did not ask to take over that body. He in no way did. If anything, you know, you could almost make it out like Wonder Woman's the rapist that, I mean, even then she unintentionally did it. So I don't know. It's very interesting. I know there's a lot of different ways you can go with it. Cause it is like, I mean, it's not, is it really an aggression? I mean, and who aggressed against who? This is like I don't know. It's a very weird idea that I don't know. There's definitely a clashing of principles, but I don't even really know how to answer that. There's so many different ways to look at it.
If you were in Wonder Woman's position though, and your dead lover got reanimated into the body of another person, wouldn't it be just a little bit creepy?
Yeah.
It'd be horrifying. It'd be weird.
It seems unnecessary too, because everything else just came into being. So why is Steve Trevor the only thing that can't just spontaneously come into being? It has to be taking over something else that already existed.
It seemed like an unnecessary step, right? Well, like what did that service?
Which is why I was going to serve something.
Yeah. Yeah. And they kind of don't do anything with it. But anyway, so that was that.
I assumed and then for that reason it was going to do something, but.
Yeah. And maybe it was a setup for something that never paid off. So anyway, and then the one last thing that I wanted to bring up. I feel like there's like a super delay or something. Cause like I start talking and then I hear you guys like finish up what you were probably saying a minute ago. It's so weird. I think our connection's getting bad, but the one other thing I wanted to bring up, and maybe this was trying to bring that Cheetah and Wonder Woman conflict more into play, was by building that relationship at the very beginning when she invites her to lunch. It almost had a flirty vibe. Like they were sort of into each other kind of a thing.
Yes. I thought this was going to be like a lesbian love affair movie. Absolutely. That romantic lunch was super romantic.
Right. And then have the conflict happen to that and have like this jilted kind of lovers quarrel thing happen.
Triangle thing going on. Yeah. Something like that could have been.
Right. And that would be the thing that kind of would make her turn to be evil. Right. And that would make a lot more sense to me than the way that they went with it. Like, let's say that scene really is her being interested in someone again, you know, because her long lost lover who's been dead for 50 years or 80 years or whatever it was, or 60 years, 65. Yeah. A lot of years. and now she's finally out on the scene, you know, and woman power, girl power, rah, rah, rah. And her and Chitara get into it with each other. And then Steve Trevor comes back, reanimates on his own. And now there's that triangle. Now there's, oh, my boyfriend's back. So sorry, Cheetah girl, not interested anymore. And then that's where the turn happens. That would have been a far better dynamic, I think, to forward the plot.
That would have been a fun angle. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah, that would have definitely. Go ahead.
Ladies first.
I mean, I think that would have been a little bit made more sense. It would have been more of an impactful, understandable decision. But I can see why you wouldn't necessarily want to go that way just because that has been done almost to death. But yeah, not necessarily the reanimated thing, but the jilted love triangle type thing. But yeah, it right. would have been way better. It could have been, especially in a slapsticky, silly, leaning into the tropey kind of 70s action movie that this seemed like it was trying to be. But anyway.
I think that could have been fun. Like, imagine if they implied they fucked. And like it was not this love thing, but Wonder Woman was very clear that this was I've loved before, you know, I just need a release or some shit like that, you know, like I need a fun night for me or some shit. And say she took it as more, and they kept on a friend relationship, and they just thought like, oh, we could just be friends. And they obviously imply that, you know, Cheetah has this admiration for Wonder Woman, and it's kind of this admiration, friendship / obviously implied kind of love. That would have been their way to establish the connection between them and establish the rift between them in a quicker and more convincing way than the shit they did, I think.
Like you were writing a much better movie than what we saw, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of our shtick here is to watch movies and ruin them. But yeah. Anyway, this has been a lot of fun, and I know we went extra long. We've been going extra long lately, but you know, my wife hasn't been complaining. So anyway, this has been our episode on Wonder Woman 84 with a touch of Wonder Woman from 2017. Our guest has been Jose Gallison of the Liberty Movement and No Way Jose. You can find my interview or your interview of me on the show notes page as well at actualanarchy.com/214. And we will be back next week with Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind with great Raylene Lightheart. And Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and all the rest, everyone. Maximum freedom. Peace out, and we'll see you guys next week.
The Chipmunks. Chipmunk. We're the Chipmunks. Guaranteed to brighten your day. Do, 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 do.